Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spoken Heard. My name is Susan Toby Chase, and today I'm thrilled to bring you from Charlotte, North Carolina, Mr. Terry Creech. How are you, Terry?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. So today, being from Charlotte and all, I would think that you're very interested in the Panthers game.
Absolutely. Today is the last the NFC Championship game, and we're all excited down here because it's the first time we've ever hosted it. And mm-hmm. we are really hoping that, you know, our boys can go ahead and get that victory so we can celebrate the Super Bowl, too.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great. So I know that the weather's been a little rough and that you've had a lot of ice and snow. And how is that affecting the game? Have you heard anything about it?
Well, I know the field conditions last week were a problem, so they were really worried about the field this week because of all the ice and snow we've had over the last few days. But mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, like, our team's actually been practicing in the ice and snow, so I'm pretty
okay.
sure they're going to be ready for whatever conditions come up. And hopefully that'll give them an advantage.
Yeah, my team lost to the Cardinals last week, the Packers, so I wish you all the luck at beating them. That would be fantastic. I bet that the whole place is a little bit abuzz about the Panthers, and I know that you like them a lot. So what are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. The city has just been taken over by the team this year. I mean, we never would have imagined them doing so well, but we have been so supportive of them no matter what, and they've delivered us a phenomenal season to be excited for. So, you know, we don't usually get a lot of things to be excited for sports-wise in this area,
mm-hmm.
outside of, like, college sports. So to have something
right.
professional, especially with a football team, it's so exciting.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I know that, again, I'm from Wisconsin, and the Packers are something that unite us all, it would seem, in the state. We're all so Packer-proud, and so I'm glad to see that you're Panther-proud as well. So
good
luck to you.
Absolutely.
And I know that there's been a big blizzard there on the East Coast. Has it affected Charlotte?
Absolutely. With where we sit in Charlotte, we kind of sit in the valley. So the northern part of Charlotte gets weather usually worse than the southern part. But
mm-hmm.
overall, we've seen a pretty bad amount of ice and snow that's hit the last few days. It's causing the roadways to, you know, get all iced up and everything. We always get ice worse than snow anyway in this part of the
mm-hmm.
country. So, yeah, we always have to worry mm-hmm. about, you know, like power lines going down, trees going down, that kind of thing. But overall, we haven't gotten worse than some of the other places on the East Coast, but we've gotten hit fairly well.
Yeah. And I'm sure that Charlotte, being a much warmer climate, doesn't have a lot of winter weather resources to deal with when it does get like this, because, you know, you're mostly concerned with temperatures well above freezing.
Yeah, we really don't have that much because, like I said, we only get an ice storm like this usually once a year, maybe once every 2 years. Some are worse than others, obviously, but, yeah, it really doesn't affect us nearly as much as it would someplace farther north.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're surviving out there. And, again, go Panthers. I'm really excited to see the game. I'll be watching with you, but just from another state. I just wanted to prevail upon you, if I could, Terry, to maybe in the beginning here, since there are so many people who know your work and would like to hear your work and other people who are unfamiliar, I was hoping that I could prevail upon you to read one of your poems.
Absolutely. I'll actually read the newest one that I've written. We can
Thank
go from
you.
There. Absolutely. And did you need a title or you just wanted to go on into it?
It doesn't matter. Whatever you'd like to do.
All right, awesome. I'll just go start off. For the ever-expanding universe, galaxies, solar systems, planetary rotations, for this young, naive world, for new lands with old fires, ancestors and memories, discovery is the emergence of property at first sight. But for you, it was the assessment of blood versus bodies, bacteria against bloodlines, death tolls, native inhabitants, amount of limbs separated from torsos, basic numbers to an accountant of inhumanity for you, circa 1492. First time like eyes held your musk. You clawed out of water the way Darwin intended. Clumped prideful boots upon shore. Pulled in first taste of free air. They questioned, how is it such a determined soul can be so hollow? Your shortest distance to innocence. Last chance to share being human. Was it long before greetings mutated diseases, smiles and sighs into thoughts that foreign lives deserved being conquistadored? Playing God feels so damn easy when your first thought is that these people don't have one. Guns, a symbolic cross and gold, three qualifications for justification, nobility lost at sea, way before you clumsied upon thousands of years of heartbeats, ferociously licking lips later about how you discovered them. No longer are teachings of how darkly your shadow stretched across shorelines, crowns clutching over distant homeland, refused harbor to actions supplied under your righteousness name, mutilations, piracy, tyranny, torture, degradation, slavery, genocide, over 500 years removed from stains written in blood, christened by your hubris, land that bears the burden of once cringing at your footsteps, now sacrifices songs and parades as tributes, turned catastrophe and murder into capitals and monoliths, your discovery now offering a day off work and discounted shopping. We sever ties and each other per your original instruction, a country bent on barreling toward your unholy legacy. Racist knights brandish your coat of arms. State flags hold open connections. Armies of blue washing over its citizens the same way your waves washed over borders, drowning the heartbeat of an entire continent. O creator of manifest destiny, harbinger of infection, inventor of immigrants, indifferent to ideals of the indigenous, feet to all that is reality, ever-existing inspiration to Hitler, infinite black hole of a person. Since you, water, blood, and all things celestial have never felt anything other than unclean.
Fantastic. I just love your work for being so honest about, well, first of all, ethnicity, but secondly, about the trials and tribulations of groups that somehow in American history tend to become marginalized, and then in American daily life continue that marginalization. Tell me a little bit about how your ancestry affects what you write.
Right. Well, I am a member of the Koharie tribe of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. We're about 2,500 strong. We're one of the 8 state-recognized tribes. And the way that being Native American works in this country is that, as far as tribal recognition is concerned, is that a state or the federal government have to recognize your tribe in order for them to legally exist. It's a crazy, weird thing that goes back to even before the country was established, to where in order to get resources, because there's so many tribes that are just, I mean, the people are living in third world conditions, they have to be, like I said, state or federally recognized, especially federally recognized. Once you become federal, then they provide you with a reservation and you receive some very, very limited resources, but some resources to help because the indigenous and Native American population in this country has been so burdened because of the conditions that we've been put into. And mm-hmm. so with my tribe, we're one of the state-recognized tribes. So the state recognizes us as being a tribe, but the federal government does not. Mm-hmm. So it's like the federal government says you don't really exist, but the state says you do, and it's this weird combination of things. And that's kind of how being Native American is a lot in this country. Is there's a lot of just confusion when it comes to who we are as a people. A lot of times mm-hmm. there's a lot of neglect of who we are as a people and complete non-recognition. And especially right. when it comes to education, I do a lot of work with teenagers and in schools. And matter of fact, that's where the bulk of my poetry work is done now. And in all of the history books and, you know, in the teaching of literature and everything that I see going on in schools, we are so underrepresented and misrepresented as a people. And then that follows people throughout their entire adulthood, that I have often felt like as a poet, it's so important for me because no one else is going to tell my story. I don't want them to tell the story of my people. We have the ability to tell our own, that it's mm-hmm. important for me to be able to tell stories about being Native American and to present ideas and thoughts on, you know, what it's like to be that way or what's going on from our perspective in today's society in order to be able to make sure that voice is still relevant and prevalent and heard as yes. opposed to it being forgotten, which a lot of times in discussions of race or ethnicity, a lot of times, you know, things just kind of boil down to either being black or white, and the Native voice right. is lost. And I always want to Absolutely. Make sure that wherever I can, I want to interject that Native voice as much as possible.
Well, I think that's wonderful. I really do. And I also admire in that piece how you address the, you know, founding of America, the discovery of America, and how silly that whole idea is, and how we still, even after all this time, even after historically knowing what Columbus actually did, we somehow celebrate and honor him one day a year. What are your thoughts on that? I could understand what you were saying about it in your poem. I just think it's important for people to hear what you have to say in this regard. So I'm going to ask the question.
Absolutely. We honor Columbus more than one day a year because we have so many cities and capitals, like I mentioned in this poem, of Ohio. You know, we have cities that are, you know, named after this murderer. We have statues that are put into different places of government that are put there in honor of this terrorist. And so, right. you know, we have a, you know, obviously history is written by the winners, or in this case, the people who were the most cruel. And so, you know, with the ability to be able to tell history from your perspective, you can paint people how you decide to paint them. And so for, you know, hundreds of years, people have looked upon Columbus and have really said, oh, okay, well, he discovered America. He must, you know, he's great because he went out and did this. Without right. truly acknowledging that you can't discover a place where people already were. And,
Amen.
You know, neglecting that knowledge and that history and that truth and giving this man the regard and respect that he never deserved. Mm-hmm. And teaching that to all of our children, including Indian children, throughout the history of our country. It's been great to see recently that a lot of cities have been acknowledging this and have been renaming Columbus Day to Indigenous Day or to Native American Day or to, you know, like different things throughout the country. But it's a slow process that's only happening yeah. city by city. But it's not happening in the classrooms where, you know, where it's important that's where the kids are learning their history.
Yeah.
But you know, it is happening. It slowly but surely is happening where people are starting to recognize that, you know, yeah, this man, not only was he, you know, did he conquer an entire mm-hmm. nation seemingly just by, you know, by starting his process, but as his years went on, even his own country disowned him because of how yeah. cruel he was to the original people that he found.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, mm-hmm. like I said, that information, as it begins to come more to light, will then start to change people's understanding and give them a little bit more respect for the people who were here originally, who were, you know, almost completely destroyed, as opposed to this individual man who led this genocide.
Right. Well, thank you for that. And I really appreciate that you went into it as much as you did, because honestly, even though this has become more prevalent in our society and people are giving Columbus a second look, I think it's really important for people who become set in their ways to also hear this and take a step back and look at it. I mean, it goes way back to even how we celebrate, you know, Thanksgiving, let's say. And we teach our children that it was a peaceful bonding between the two groups, and they came together for this wonderful meal, and everybody lived happily ever after, when that's not the case. You know, we draw our pilgrims with little buckles on their shoes, and we draw the stereotypical Native American characters, and they're all smiling and together. And there's another thing we need to take a step back and look at, because that historically is incorrect.
Absolutely. And it really does come to, like you say, I mean, you know, we learn those things very, very early in childhood, where, mm-hmm. like you said, you know, they cut out the, you know, the pilgrim hats, they cut out the bands with the feather attached to them, and they keep, you know, they mm-hmm. put these on these kids that are, you know, in first, second, third grade. They have them do little Thanksgiving plays and pageant stuff. And a lot of people, again, you know, I'm not saying that they're doing this intentionally, but a lot of people are not understanding that, you know, when they put these, you know, bands with these feathers on these little children who are not Native American, when they put yeah. this war paint on these children who, you know, don't have that culture and that history, they're basically putting these kids in red face, which is mm-hmm. totally against the black face, and they're right. really being disrespectful to an entire, you know, racial group and cultural group of people. And again, without recognizing it, because I acknowledge most people don't even recognize what they're doing, that it's wrong, but
yes.
it is. And again, it's just something that, you know, like you said, it got into the culture of our country that this is something that little kids should do, because it's fun and it's neat, and, you know, kids play Cowboys and Indians all the time anyway, so they might as well do this dress-up too, but they need to be informed mm-hmm. a little bit more that what they're doing is just, it's not accurate, and it's disrespectful.
Right, right. And there need to be history textbooks that are rewritten for children and the whole thing. So get me started.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, because we're more than halfway through the interview, I was hoping that I could get you to read a second thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is a poem I wrote in regards to my the job that I work. I work as a dispatcher for the fire department here in Charlotte, so I wrote a poem from that perspective. The worst phone call I ever took was from my father, reaching out from his living room in Florida, sitting in his chair, pulling stoic words through tear-soaked breath. He just wanted to know what hospital his daughter had been sent to. Her car parkoured down I-485 at rush hour. They found her begging for air, packaged her up, delivered her into a helicopter. It flew off towards a doctor or a tow tag. And now this man, this father, wanted to know where he may have to travel to in order to identify the body. The recording time of that conversation was 42 seconds. The length of it will last way beyond the next one that is just like it, and there will be one that is just like it. Charlotte Fire Department, what is the address of your emergency? I can say it in my sleep. A first aid kit and duct tape beside my bed for mornings, putting pieces back together again after helping my city's citizens put their pieces back together again. The firefighters go out and help people. The dispatchers sit caged inside four walls listening to nightmares, armed with information, resources, and a headset that connects your worst days to my next 42 seconds. We do it because we were made to help people. We do it because we're the only ones that can. Handling a 68-year-old man receiving CPR, a woman giving birth to her first child, and what remains of two star-crossed teenage lovers who, instead of sleeping with each other, decided to lay their heads on the closest railroad track and let CSS rock them to sleep all at the same time. The less someone screams, the more serious the problem really is. They teach us that on the first day. Sometimes their cries for help sound like prayers. I had to learn that all on my own. We sit in chairs and wait for your worst day to happen, for your shaking voice to reach out for mercy, calling to be rescued, to direct living and breathing saviors to destinations, to make sure that you and help become radically acquainted. Because emergencies never take vacations or celebrate holidays. Because helping people is what I was born to do. And I do it 42 seconds at a time.
Oh, bravo. That is so moving. It really is. And I bless you, honestly, for being that person who can direct people in their time of need. It seems like you're natural to that kind of work. And, you know, that even shows up in the work that you do with kids. But this is, you know, the way you start out with the individual human being and then you work it out to the more universal idea of helping others is just beautiful here. What is it like for you to be in that kind of position of authority? I mean, I've heard about it a little bit in what you just read, and it was beautiful, so I'm going to try to revisit that. What is it like to sit behind that phone? Have you ever had a situation where you felt like you saved people? Have you ever had a position where you felt like you could have done more? I'm sure that you have both, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been a dispatcher now for 7 years, and unfortunately, I mean, sometimes you hear. I mean, you know you've worked a call that you can hear the people doing exactly what you're telling them to do, and you can hear the fire trucks coming in. And even recently, there was a call that I worked where I know that as a result of something that I told the caller to do, it ended up saving the lives of two people. And stuff like that is very moving. But, you know, we also have those other calls where one of the worst calls I ever took was a fatality involving two children, where their mother left them alone, or left four children home alone, all under the age of eight, for an entire evening, and the kids ended up catching a heater on fire because it was really cold that night, and the two youngest ones ended up dying, and there was nothing that we could do. And I'm sitting there listening to the neighbors screaming out, you know, that they need help for these kids, and, you know, I can't get a truck there any faster than what I've dispatched them to. So just listening to that, it can be very disturbing, and it can break you up a little bit. But like I said, doing what we do, we have to have a mindset of, you know, you got to get past it and get to the next person, because, like I said, emergencies never stop. So there always has to be someone there to answer them.
Yeah. Wow.
But, and I mean, I love what I do. I love what I do, you know. And unfortunately enough, because I work overnight, when some of the worst emergencies can happen. But it also opens me up to be able to do so much work during the daytime with the individual schools around in Charlotte. And that's what I do as far as, you know, since I've started up our youth organization here about 3 years ago called Breathe Inc. It really has given us the opportunity to work with, you know, thousands of kids. Literally last year we worked with 3,500 kids in a four-county area of just exposing them to poetry and the power that poetry can provide for them and expressing themselves and getting to know who they are. And the last 2 years, we've taken teams to Brave New Voices, which is the Youth International Poetry Festival. And we're going to be doing it again this year. And just, I mean, the opportunities that we've been able to do with these kids has just been overwhelming. I've been so thankful for the opportunity to do that.
And how do you get your funding for that? Is that something in which the public is involved?
Well, we partnered with the local, the largest local arts organization here in Charlotte, which is the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center. And so we partnered with them in order for them to provide us space. And then we also take donations. We're currently working on getting our nonprofit status updated, and we're going to be looking at getting, you know, going through grant funding and really building it up so that we can get into more schools and we can do more work with these teenagers.
So let us know, where can we get a hold of you if we wanted to give a donation?
Absolutely. They can. The best way to do it is to contact us through email for our organization. The email for that is just info@breatheinkpoetry.com, or they can just visit our website, which is www.breatheinkpoetry.com, and get in contact
and
with us.
And Breathe Ink is all one word, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Breathe Ink.
Yes, it is.
It's actually the Breathe Ink Youth Poetry Initiative is the full name of the organization.
Nice. Is there anything else you'd like to promote? Different shows, venues, merchandise, whatever you've got here, because we're coming into the end of the show, and I would feel remiss if I didn't allow you that opportunity.
Yeah, really, it's just, you know, I love what I'm doing with these kids right now. They're inspiring me every single day. And so, you know, we have a monthly slam that we do for them, and we also have open mics and workshops that Jay Ward and Jessica King, who are two of our other adult poets, are working with us on. And it's really just a lot of opportunities for poets and youth poets in this area to grow as artists. So if anyone wants to just go to our website or visit us on Facebook or on Twitter or any of the social media websites, then they can always find us there and find out information about what we're doing.
Excellent. Excellent. And if you are youth or you are parents with children who are of the age where they could actually practice this kind of art, I've seen so many kids learn about who they are and what they believe in through it. It's a beautiful catharsis, and I recommend it to anyone. I've been a high school English teacher in the past, and it's amazing to just see the growth that that kids go through because of it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations to you for starting such a good organization. And I've only got like a minute, but I just wanted to mention that you also were the head of the organization of Charlotte Slam?
I actually founded Slam Charlotte back in 2004 and was the Slam Master there for the first 3 years.
Yeah. You're amazing, just amazing. I'm sorry that I have to cut this at this point because I want you to read us out. If I could, I'd just like to say thank you to everyone who's listening. And next week, tune in again. And here in this final reading is Mr. Terry Creech.
All right. To the fans of the Washington Redskins, we are sure that we don't mean anything to you. We know that your seed with this team has been planted since you first inhaled Capitol air. The way rat poison can taste sweet when mixed in with frosting, you've been spoon-fed hypocrisy and devoured hate since you put on your first jersey and were told that wearing war paint was okay at the ballpark. Instead of asking the right questions, you immediately got defensive. You said it's a name of honor, said that we are being ridiculous, told us that we should have said something before now. The word redskin has always only been used as a racial slur or describing a potato. Since Mr. Pringles isn't on the sides of your helmets, how do you expect us not to be concussed by the force of discrimination? To question how easily we are ignored, dismissed, and forgotten, to get pissed off when you preach from Capitol Hilltop on how we've got it all wrong. But how can anyone whose race has ever been persecuted, enslaved, victims of genocide, treated like animals, turn around and speak the same language as their oppressor, wear red and gold colors, for feathers in their hair, use their breath to expel war cries, and our culture as an activity bank for your cheers. Forget any use of creativity or poetry. It's nothing short of absolutely disgusting. How dare anyone question the way we want our heritage and culture defined? We are proud members of the original descendants of this nation. We are not mascots. And no matter how many times your owner rolls his eyes, the league ignores our demands, or lifelong fans remind us that it's always been that way, you cannot make the word Redskins a term saturated and sweating with hate socially justified.
Mm. Thank you, Terry, so much for being my guest today. Be kind to each other until next week. This is Susan W. Chase, and this is Ben Spoken Hurts.